There's a pasuk in this week's parsha which we'd like to discuss and how it comes to Lach L'maisa, and if we're really fortunate, we'll be able to tie it into Rosh Hashanah, which is Haba Aleinu L'Tova as well. So we get to two birds with one stone. Those two birds will make sense in a second. So let's begin. There's a Gemara in Maseches Tainus. It's also a Gemara in Bav Mitzia and Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph. This is on Tainus Ches Amud Beis. The Gemara says as follows: V'amar Rav Yitzchak, Ein HaBracha. Bracha, blessing from Hashem, mutziya ela bedavar hasamim min ayin. This is the rule. Bracha, blessing from Hashem, only falls on something that is hidden from one's eye, something that is hidden. Hashem will not cause something to miraculously multiply in front of anyone. It has to be hidden where no one has seen it yet. How do I know this? It's a pasuk in this week's parsha, Shneamar. As it says in Dvarim, Perek Chav Ches, Yitzav Hashem, Itcha es habracha ba'asamecha, that Hashem is going to bring blessing into your granaries. Asamecha is granaries. Now, the Gemara makes a drasha, ba'asamecha, that which is samoy, that which is hidden. Hashem brings bracha on that which is hidden from you. Tana debay, Rabbi Yishmael was taught in the academy of Rabbi Yishmael, ein habracha matzui el bedavar she'en ha'ayin shaletes bo. Bracha only occurs to something that the eye cannot see. Shneamar yitzav Hashem yitzcha es habracha v'asamecha. Again, Hashem sends bracha into your storehouses, or in this case, that which is hidden. Tana Rabbanan. The rabbis taught in a b'raisa. Hanichnas lemot es grano. A person who is entering into count his granary. He's going to take an accounting of how much he has in produce. So Omer, he should say as follows: Yirat somi ofanacha Hashem Elokeinu shetishlach bracha b'masei adenu, that Hashem should send bracha. Hashem should send bracha into what we have accomplished. Hiskil lemod Omer. Then he should say Baruch Hasholech bracha b'kri hazeh. Blessed are you, Hashem, who sends. Well, this is the question. Hashaleach. The question that we're going to have to see is the Gemara saying who has sent blessing into this pile of produce, or who will send blessing into this pile of produce? Madad, and then he measures. Now, after he makes the bracha, bi'achakach. But if he measures the granary and he takes an accounting of what he has, and then he makes the bracha, harezu tefilas shav. That is a wasteful tefillah. She'en ha-brach mitzul el lo b'davar ha-shakol for lo b'davar ha-madud. Brach will not happen something that was already counted, something that was already measured. For lo b'davar ha-money ela b'davar ha-sami min ha-ayin. Right? So if I go into the granary beforehand, before I start counting, and I don't know how much is in there, and I say, Hashem, Hashem, give me brach in here, so perhaps Hashem will miraculously cause what's going on here to multiply without my knowledge, and then I'll end up with more than I could have had before. But if I count it, and then I say, Hashem, I'd like a miracle. Can you please double in size whatever I've made this year? So that's not going to work because it's not samoy min ayin anymore. It's not hidden from one's eye. I'll have to explain why this is the case later on. This is cited by the Rambam Hilchos Brachos in Perek Yud Halacha Chaf Beis. It is also cited by the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch and Orach Chaim Siman Reish Lamed Beis. Look at what the Shulchan Aruch says. Hanichnas lamod, person who goes into count, Es grono omer hi rasam yochanecha Hashem Elokai shetishlach bracha b'kri hazeh. They should send bracha into this kri. Now look at the difference. In the Gemara it said you should send bracha b'maaseh yadenu, into what we have done with our hands. And the Shulchan Aruch it says b'kri hazeh, into this pile. There might be a difference. Hischilimod omer bracha sholeach bracha b'kri hazeh. When you begin to count, you should make the bracha beforehand. But if you count and then you make the bracha, that's a tefillah shav. She'en habracha mitzuyel abadavash hasami, because bracha only falls on that which is hidden from the eye. Now the Eliyahu Rabbah points out that the Gemara and all the Rishonim say shetishach bracha b'maaseh yadenu, right? That you should onto what we have created, versus you should send bracha onto this pile of food. So what's with the switch? So the Eliyahu Rabbah explains that the originally he wrote on the Gemara was for people who took Trumas and Maisos all the time. Every single day they'd be taking Trumas and Maisos, separating a tithe here, separating a tithe there. So therefore, for these people, they said B'chol Ma'aseh Adenu, because everything they did with their hands had to do with Trumas and Maisos. All their whole livelihood revolved around tithing and giving presents to the Kohanim. And therefore it was very common for them. But we don't regularly take Trumas and Maisos in our everyday life, and therefore the Hiratzon was changed to B'kri Hazeh, to this specific case. this specific area, I want bracha, because we don't really do it that often. And since it's not a general bracha about everything we do, it's really, really compounded to issues of produce, says the Rabbah, and therefore that's why the Hiraton changes in this case. The Birka Yosef says that simply the Tur had a different text based on the Tosefta, and that's why there's differences, not because of any fancy idea. Okay, the Marsha says the bracha needs to be made before counting, as the Pashas of the Gemara seems to be. This also seems to be an understanding of the Ritva and Bava Metzia, that the bracha is on the future, on what will happen as I am counting later on. However, the Chida and the Birka Yosef in Sif Katan Vav says that it's clear from the Rishonim the bracha can be made after counting as well, because they seem to say that the bracha is there in order to thank Hashem for what you've already gotten. Is the bracha going on something that I want Hashem to give me in the future, or is the bracha going on something that I'm thanking Hashem for what I've already gotten as well? The Meiri in Tainus Testament Aleph says you can go on what was already counted. It can go on what was already counted as well. And the idea is that we're asking Hashem for mercy on what we already have. So again, that's the two approaches here. Is the bracha, the Hiratzon surely is before you count, right? Hiratzon should be that Hashem should give me something that I don't know about. But the bracha, can that be said before or after? That depends on, is this a bracha on something that will happen in the future, or is this a bracha on something that I've already counted? This is the machlokas and the Rishonim. I know it's not really so lemaisa at this point in time because we do not counts produce that much, but we'll bring it halacha l'maisa in a second. The Ritva in Bava Metzia cites the Ramban, who says that this is a chiyuv. You must make this bracha every single time you count your produce, and that's the sheet of the Ramban. The Lavush says the bracha should be said without Shem L'malchus, right? It doesn't say in the Gemara, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. It just says Baruch. So the Birka Yosef says that it's not exactly clear what the bracha is going on. So when we do say the bracha, which we don't really say the bracha nowadays, but if we were to say the bracha, so then you would say without Shem L'malchus, because it's not exactly clear. The Divrei Chamudos and Brachos Perek Tes, questions the Lavush, Rashi, and Tainus Chesam and Aleph, and the Kesef Mishnah both say the bracha should be said b'shem l'malchus. You would say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. Again, so we have a machlokes Rishonim over here. This is the opinion of Rabbeinu Manoach, the Makor Chaim. And the Elyo Rabbah defends Lavush by saying that since we don't regularly separate Shumas and Maestros, so therefore, again, why are you going to say with Shem Malchus? We don't really do this so often, and therefore this bracha has really fallen out of favor, or it's not something in common that we do. And the Mishnah Berurah writes in Sifkas and Dalet here in Reish Lamed that the bracha is recited without Shem Malchus. Why is this relevant for anyone here? Nobody here counts produce. So there is a comment here of the Chayyadim. The Chayyadim writes in Klal Samechei, Beis, Hanichnas Lamod Grono Shal Tvua. And then he adds, Olach Shov Secharos Shalchanuso. If you go into the store and you want to count what you have in the store, what you're going to be selling, you're taking accounting of anything, if you are in business and you buy and sell, says the Chayyadim, this Yiratzon is for you. Omer Yiratzon Lefanach Hashem Elokeinu Velokei Avosinu Shetishlach Bracha B'Kri Hazeh. Oh, B'Schoris Shalchanus Hazeh. You can change the Yiratzon. Hashem, I'm making an accounting of what I have bought and sold over the course of the year. I'm looking at my records right now. Yiratzon, that before I look at it, you know, something miraculous should happen. There should be extra money in the bank, hopefully legally. And, you know, this is the Yiratzon that you can make. So says the Chayyadim, we can transfer it from produce and apply it as well to everyday commerce of buying and selling. The Shirei Brachin, Sifkatz, and Bezer, Reish Lamed. So he says that you can even do it when taking and counting for taxes, right? Before you account how much you've made throughout the course of the year, so you don't really know exactly how much it is, so you can say, Yiratzon, I hope that somehow I made more money than I thought I did, and maybe Hashem will help you out and give you a little help. Again, that the money is there.
The taxes
legally.
You may be proposing that you have a reduction.
Whatever. So how to figure it out that the United States government should help me out in the best legal possible way. Now this discussion enters into a larger issue in Hashkafa regarding davening for a miracle. We're just going to touch upon a small part of this. The Maharsha in Bava Metzia there in the Gemara says that how does this work? What's going on here? That it's an issue of Ayin Hara. Once I look at the item and I've seen it, so now the Ayin Hara can affect it, and therefore bracha cannot be brought upon it anymore. And the Toras Chaim says it's a very strange thing, because Ayin Hara doesn't apply to your own stuff. Who's going to give an Ayin Hara to their own business? An ayin hara is always something that somebody else looks at what you've had and therefore davens to Hashem, and Hashem judges you based on what you've accomplished. So says the Taurus Chaim, what do you mean ayin hara? It doesn't make any sense. And therefore he says that simply it's just an issue of miracles. Miracles only happen on things that are hidden. Miracles don't happen on things that are public. Hashem pulls out the miracle card very rarely, splitting a sea, but really much more than that, not so much. And therefore, if you want something miraculous to happen, it needs to be hidden for you. And therefore, once you expose it, so therefore there's not going to be any more miracles for you. This is the explanation of a number of Rishonim as well. The Bechor Shor, in his parish of Masechet Shabbos and Chaf Aleph and Mabez. So he cites another issue of davening for a miracle. The Ramah in Kuf Pei Zayin Dal. This is in the Halachos of Benching. So the Ramah says, if you forget to say Al Hanisim, so you should say a Hiratzon on Chanukah and Purim that says that Hashem should do miracles for us in the future. It's a very strange Hiratzon. We don't daven for miracles. So how come the Ramah says we should say a HaRachaman that in the future Hashem should do miracles for us? Because Al Hanisim and the tefillos that correspond to Chanukah and Purim are simply tefillos that thank Hashem for the miracles that happened. But why would the Ramah say we should daven for miracles? We don't daven for miracles, right? Ein somech al nes. We don't try to pull a miracle card because it's only going to come back and hurt us later on. So the Gemara in Brachos as well says in Samech al Aleph that you cannot daven to Hashem to change the gender of a fetus, right? And that would seem, again, you can't daven for a miracle. So the Bechor Shor answers that a yachid is not allowed to daven for a miracle, but a tzibor, a group of people, can daven for a miracle. So when it comes to Chanukah and Purim, 100%, everyone is allowed to daven for a miracle for the Klal Yisrael, that Hashem should bring us miracles for the Jewish people. But your own individual miracles, right? And those things, those areas, you should not daven for a miracle. Okay? You could also daven, says the Bechor Shor, for things that are al pi teva. You can daven for natural things. You can daven for a military victory. You can daven for health. But something that goes against nature is not a type of miracle that one should daven for. Now, the problem with this answer is that our Gemara clearly says that you can daven for your produce to grow. And that is something that is not within nature. Right? It's not natural for me to have 100 kilo of grain, and then for it to double to 200. That's not natural. So how does that fit with our Gemara? Because our Gemara seems to say that you can daven for a miracle before you go to count your produce. So Rashi clearly says in our Gemara, V'rabba me'alav. When you go to count the produce, it will increase on its own miraculously. And therefore, our Gemara does say that you can daven for a miracle. So this question was asked to Rav Chaim Kanievsky in a sefer called the Inyano Shel Yom. The Inyano Shel Yom, a number of volumes. This is on the Moadim. This is on page Chaf Gimel. So the author asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky this contradiction. How could it be that we're not supposed to daven for a miracle? You don't daven for the fetus to change. You don't daven for all these amazing things, but when it comes to grain, we do daven for the grain to miraculously multiply on its own. So says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, I'll read you what he said. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara teva shetvua yecholil hisrabos. There's something within the nature of grain that in some natural way can multiply. That's why Hashem created the world. And what's the raya? The raya is in this week's parsha. Yitzav Hashem itcha es habracha ba'asamecha. Hashem tells us when it comes to granaries, when it comes to storehouses, there's something a little bit special. Why is tefua special? Why is produce special? I'm not sure. And it's not exactly clear how to explain what Chaim Kanievsky is saying, but it certainly seems to have the pasuk supporting it. Grain is unique in a way that it has this kind of in-between miracle but nature status as well. I don't think that Rav Chaim Kanievsky is alone in making this three-part approach. The Sifsei Chaim, Rav Chaim Friedlander, writes in his Emunah v'Hashgacha and Chelek Aleph Mein Shkuch Chav Ches that the reason we don't daven for a miracle after a person has been counted is because it would take away a level of bechira, right? If every single time, if I knew that after I daven for my grain, that I knew it was 100, now it turns into 200, then where would be my free choice? It would kind of remove the curtain, and we would see, you know, the wizard behind the curtain if we saw Hashem double the grain before our eyes, and therefore that's why it doesn't work. Rabbeinu Bachya in Parshas Kisisa and his Hakdama and the Sfas Emes and Tainus Ches and Adai says that you need certain merits to get this, and most people don't have merits for open miracles. most of the population can't pull this off, and that's why they don't do it. And there is a whole shaila in the Achronim whether do you need to take Trumas and Maestros on your miracle grain? Let's say you davened and it turns into 100 into 200. You know a miracle just happened. Are things that produce alpi miracles and nace, do you need, are they subject to halacha? There's a discussion, for example, by the Hanukkah candles that they lasted for 8 days, right? So are the, were those things subject to the halacha because it seemed to be above space and time? So the same question over here. Chaim Kievsky has a piece about it in his Derech Emunah and Trumos and Perek Beis. The Baal HaTorim seems to go against Chaim Kievsky. The Baal HaTorim writes in Devarim Perchav Hei that it seems that even money can multiply miraculously. That seems to be the understanding of the Baal HaTorim. If you want to, you can daven for it and hope that you don't look at your bank account tonight and then daven for it and see what happens. Maybe it'll happen to your money as well. And then the Chafetz Chaim really kind of puts Chaim Kievsky's opinion in proper perspective. The Chafetz Chaim wrote a sefer called the Nefutzos Yisrael in Perek Ches. The Nefutzos Yisrael is always published at the end of the Shem Olam. And the Chafetz Chaim says that the entire world can be divided into three categories of Hashem's actions. There are things that are miraculous, like the splitting of the sea. There are things that are natural, like a tree that grows. And then there's something in between. There are things where the nature and the miracle kind of combine together in this in-between area. And it could be that this is what Rav Chaim Kanievsky is talking about when he says that grain was created in a state where it naturally produces on its own. So there's a bunch of different approaches. I think Ari Leibowitz has a shiur about davening and genetic testing and things like that. I think he also touches upon this stira, this contradiction as well. But this is a well-known contradiction. How do we have sometimes where you can daven for a miracle and then sometimes where you are not allowed to daven for a miracle? Let's move on to determining the gender of a child. Does that violate the issue of something that is samoy min ha'ayin, right? When the fetus is inside the mother's stomach, so you don't know what it is. It could be a male, it could be a female. It could be healthy, it could be rahman al-san, not healthy. We'll put that issue on the side of genetic testing and davening and genetic testing and the issues of what the post can feel about doing it or not doing it. It's not for right now, and it's way complicated for the time that we have. But let's just discuss issues of knowing the gender of the child. If the child, if the parent, for example, wants to have a child of a certain gender, and he davens for it, maybe Hashem will cause a miracle inside the fetus, and it could have been one way, and it flips to another, right? We know what happened with the Imos, right? Leah could have had a
could
boy.
Have the first 40 days.
First 40 days, right? All these are possible. Alpi Chazal is certainly possible. But it, you find out, if you go to the doctor, and they do an ultrasound, you do a sonogram, and you find out, you know, you can find it early and early nowadays, certainly by the 20-week mark, you can find out whether the child is a boy or a girl. So you just ruined it. It's not summing min ha'ayin anymore. And therefore, whatever potential to turn to have the child be a boy or a girl has been lost. So let's see what they say. Rav Nevensol discusses this very shortly in the back of his Mishnah Berurah. In the Chelek Vav, in his Mishnah Berurah, he has a number of random topics, and he writes there in the section called Mishpacha, family issues, in Sif Gimel, he says that there's no issue at all the parents finding out what the gender is. It does not affect it in any area at all, and it's perfectly normal and fine while the child is in utero, and there's no discussion whatsoever. However, there seems to be a number of poskim who, for some reason, al pi hashkafa, object to finding out what the gender of the child is. Rav Chaim Kanievsky is cited in the Shelus Rav, and I don't really like these svarim, but there are a number of places they cite him saying this, so we'll assume that this is his opinion in some way. The Shelus Rav in Chelek Aleph in Perek Yud Beis and the Dola Umashka on page Shinan Dalet, Chaim Kanievsky is quoted as saying that it's proper not to investigate the gender of the child unless it is necessary, for whatever reason it may be. And in Halakhically Speaking, Rabbi Moshe Dov Leibowitz, this is Halakhically Speaking, Volume 4, in Year 4, Volume 22. So he says this is the opinion of Shmuel Felder as well, of Lakewood, and also of Toby Goldstein, who felt that you should not check the gender of the child. No reason is really given. But they do cite, many of them cite the following medrash in Koheles Rabbah. Koheles Rabbah in Perek Yud Aleph test says as follows, that Shiva Devarim Muchusim Mibnei Adam. There are 7 things that are hidden from every person. Veiluheim, what are they? Yom HaMis, the day of death. Yom HaNachama, ba'omek hadin u'bamahu mistaker mistaker u'ma b'libo shel chavero u'ma b'ibura shel isha. There are seven things that are supposed to be hidden, and one of the things are that which is in the uterus of the woman. That is supposed to be hidden, says the Medrash in Koheles Rabbah. And these are these seven things. It's repeated as well in Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah and Parshas Toldos as well. These seven things. But there's a list of different seven things in Masechus Pesachim, Daf and Dalet. It doesn't include this, seven things that a person's not supposed to know. But here in these two places in the Midrashim, we do seem to say that that which is hidden inside the uterus when the woman is pregnant should supposed to be hidden and should remain hidden according to this Medrash. Now the Yafa Tawar, the Peirush on the Medrash, explains as follows, that if it's hidden, the parents won't end up becoming disappointed. And if they won't be disappointed, it might not be what they hope for. Maybe there might be a problem with the child. And therefore, it could ruin them, make them depressed, take away from the anticipation, whatever it is. Says the Yafa Tawar, he doesn't think it's a good idea to know what's going on inside the mother's womb. However, in the Toras Hayoledes, in Perek Nun Zion, so the author gives a fantastic way to get around this Medrash. And it's based on a tshuva of the Chassam Sofer, in Chelek Beis, in Eben Ezer, in Siman Pei Beis. Now, I looked at the tshuva of the Chassam Sofer, I did not see what they're talking about there, but we'll go with it anyway. They said as follows. The Chassam Sofer apparently said that there's a difference between an Isha and a Me'uberes. An Isha is a woman, a Me'uberes is someone who's pregnant. The Chassam Sofer says that a Me'uberes is any time after the first trimester. In Isha, in the language of Chazal, is any time within the first trimester. Again, the first trimester, Isha, after the first trimester, Me'uberes. What does the Mishnah say? Uma b'ubra shel Isha. Okay? If that's the case, says the, according to this, says the Torah Seoledes, we're talking about a woman in her first trimester. And it's actually very difficult, if not almost impossible, to know well if the child is a male or a female within the first trimester. And therefore, when the Medrash says, Mavi Bura Shel Isha, that's going on the first trimester. And therefore, you can't figure it out anyway. Only afterwards would you not be able to, or would you be allowed to figure it out. Once she becomes Me'uberes, says the Torah Sayoledes, so then you would be allowed to find out whether the child is a male or a female, what is going on. That's a cute way to figure out and to put today modern day practice with what the Medrash is saying as well. Okay? Next, the Shevet HaKahasi, Roshamai Gross and Chelek Aleph and Shin Yud Ches, cites a Yerushalmi and Brachos in Perek Tes, which argues on the opinion of the Gemara, which says that the gender cannot be changed after 40 days. Right? We have an understanding that the gender within 40 days, so then everything is up for grabs. But there's a Yerushalmi that says, even within the 40, at any time, the gender can be changed. And this opinion says the gender could be changed until labor begins. So says the Shevet HaKahasi, according to this Yerushalmi, if you want to have that ability to change male or female back or forth, so then don't find out, because then you're going to lose it according to the opinion in the Yerushalmi. Again, it's the Yerushalmi against the Bavli. We usually follow the Bavli over the Yerushalmi, but perhaps another reason not to find out. In the Kovet Aliba de Hilchasa, in Ayin Aleph, on page Lamed Beis, Rav El Yakim Devorat, who's a Talmud Chacham Eretz Yisrael, so he quotes from Menashe Klein, saying that one should be Tavim Ti Hashem Lokecha, to be pure with Hashem, and not find out the gender of the child. You can actually find the whole tshuva to Rabbi Dvorak's in the Mishnah Halachos in Chelek Tes Vav, where he discusses this in full. And the Nishmas Avram, Rabbi Dr. Abraham in Yerodea Kuf Peites Gimel, he cites from Rabbi Yeshua Neuvert, the author of the Shmir Shams Kilchasa, as saying that it's not proper to an ultrasound for the purpose of knowing the gender. So we have many, many poskim saying that you should not find out the gender of the child.
What's the reason? That's what
so
I'm
that's
missing.
The issue. What? It's not clear. We have a medrash that's very vague. It's maybe you'll lack the issue of some min ha'ayin anymore, but the issues are all al pi hashkafa. It's not al pi halacha. There's nothing to say that it's usur or that it's mutter. There's no real reason to say that is actually problematic. And no one says that it's usur. In many cases, it's beneficial for the parents to know. Could be coming to planning. Maybe you want to know if there's going to be a shalom zachar. You want to know what to decorate the room. I don't know, whatever it may be. You know, it could be beneficial in certain ways to know if it's going to be a male or a female later on. In addition, it's also very clear from other posts, as we'll see in a second, that there is no issue at all, because we're going to discuss another case, and they raise no issue with checking the gender of the child when it comes to an ultrasound. And it's the clear opinion of Rav Asher Weiss and Rav Adi Yosef that ultrasounds and using them for whatever you need to know is perfectly fine, and there's no issue as well. Again, there's a whole discussion when it comes to issues of ultrasounds and finding out about genetic diseases and the health of the child. Should you find out, maybe you can daven and fix it. But the opinion of the poskim nowadays, in consultation with medical experts, is that we do perform regular ultrasound checks and sonograms to know the health of the baby. Because forget issues of, you know, if I do an ultrasound and I find out the child is, you know, terribly ill, and Rahman al-San, there's a discussion about abortion and things like that, not even that issue. There are ways to save the child and save the mother and to correct issues by doing ultrasounds and knowing what's going on with the child. Forgetting issues of abortion, just general health of the mother and the child, it's important to follow the doctor's orders and to do regular, you know, checkups when it comes to issues of sonograms and these issues. Which brings us now to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The Ramah in Tafresh Hay says that if a pregnant woman should take an extra chicken for kaparos to include the child that is inside of her. This is brought by the Ramah, and the Bach cites the Maharil, who says it should be a rooster, because it's going to be a male, and the language of the male will cover the language for female as well. And this is what the Ramah says. Just a quick background to kaparos, just so we're aware of what we're talking about. Kaparos is based on a comment of the Shita of the Gaonim. It's also a Rashi and Shabbos on Peheim and Pe'alpha and Beis that talks about taking like a plant and waving it around their head. And there was this minhag of the Gaonim to take a chicken or a lamb, depending on what was going on at the time of the season, and to wave it as a form of kapara, either acted as like a korban, or the Averis are going on to this thing instead of you. This is the idea of kaparos. The Chubas HaRashba was very much against it. He thought it was 100% usser, and he tried to get it out of Spain as much as he could. In the original printings of the Shulchan Aruch calls it a minhag shtus. The Shulchan Aruch is not a fan of it. In the later printings, they censored it out so that he wouldn't call it a minhag shtus, a silly minhag.
But the chicken lobby won out.
The chicken lobby won out. So this we're left with kaparos. Kaparos is something that people do, but it's also something that people don't do. So with this in mind, let's discuss this issue. You do an ultrasound, and you know that there are twins, that the mother has twins. So do you need to have more chickens for the mother? What do? Do you need to have two chickens? Yeah, the mother's going to have one, and according to the Ramah, you have another one for the fetus. So you have twins. Does that mean you need to have three chickens with the mother? Okay? So the Lubavitcher Rebbe is Masupak. He doesn't know. He writes in the Chuvos Ubiurim and Simen Kuf Peyal that he doesn't know about an ultrasound nowadays. Maybe ultrasound's not exact. Ultrasound's pretty exact. You can tell if there's two babies in there. But maybe in his day it wasn't. So he doesn't know what to do. Do you have to take more chickens? Do you not have to take more chickens? Unclear. So Rav Meir Bransdorf from the Kana Bosim Chelik Beis Simen Chaf was asked to answer this question by, at that point, the Av Basin Veda Charedus Rav Yitzchak Weiss to deal with this issue regarding how many chickens you need to take when it comes to kaparos and a mother who the ultrasound says that she has twins. So he says, the ultrasound shows that there are twins, then you need to take three hens and two roosters. That's five fowl. Three hens and two roosters for kaparos for this one person. Why? Because we don't know, this is assuming, if we don't know the fetuses are male or female. Now, just as a side point, what do you see from here? He raises no issue of finding out whether it's male or female. He just assumes that at this point we don't know whether it's male or female. But he doesn't say you can't find out whether it's male or female. So he says, why do you need three hens and two roosters? Because you need to figure out every single possible option. With one hen for the mother, and then it could be two males, it could be two females, it could be one male, one female. So you need two roosters, two hens, to figure out every single possible option. And therefore, five chickens, tzedakah, if the mother has twins, according to the ultrasound. And this is his opinion. Rabbi Yitzchak Naiman, who is the Diamond Bells, writes in the Agura Bohalach and Orachayim Peites that even if the ultrasound tells you that the child is a male or a female, it's not reliable enough to go against the minhag of the Arizal, and you need to have all different types of chickens there in order to cover all your bases and to use a hen and a rooster. And I just would think it's highly debatable to be machmer in this minhag. It's a minog, which is of questionable origin anyway, according to the Shulchan Aruch and the Shuvas HaRashba. And we're going to be machmir to have five chickens because the woman is pregnant, and you don't know if it's a male or a female. So first of all, you can figure out if it's a male or female, and if you want, at least we'll get you down to three chickens. And then to be machmir for a minog that we have of questionable origin anyway, it's... I don't know. I don't think we have to go so far when it comes to issues, these issues of kaparos. There's another issue of ultrasound we're not going to discuss tonight. That's issues of kohanim. That if you know that the child is a male and the mother is giving birth in a hospital, so you know that a male kohen is going to come out during the labor, so then do you have to be careful to be in a place where there's no tumas meis? Because you know, if you rely on the ultrasound being that it's a male, is that enough to have to be in a hospital? There's not going to be any tumas meis. This is discussed at great length in the Sefer Kedushas HaShavas in Chelek Aleph, page 18. He has a long, long piece about whether it's enough, it's not reliable, do you have to be in what place in the hospital, all these issues of ultrasound. But, halacha ma'aseh at the end of the day, so we daven to Hashem that He should give us a bracha and atzlacha in all of our produce and all of our business, but only before we count, not after we count. And this comes out, it would seem to be halacha ma'aseh, that there's really no reason to say, well, you can't find out what the gender of the child is. It seems there's no isser against it. Maybe I'll be ashtafa, there's what to argue, but there's certainly no isser. And when it comes to kaparos as well, if you want to have a lot of chickens, then go ahead. But if you don't want to have too many chickens, and it's a lot to give away, so then you're perfectly fine with whatever the Ikra Din was in the Arizal and the Shulchan Aruch.
But you're still left with the prohibition.